tuned in to Radio Aryan.
Thank you. Well, I hope you all enjoyed the lunch. We still have more breaks to go and we have afternoon tea later. But now we're going to recommence with our speakers. And the next speaker can be called a rising star of the nationalist movement. Now, she's only emerged recently and started a YouTube channel which has had meteoric success, and rightfully so, because her content is absolutely top-notch. But she also stands out for another reason, and that's because she's not just somebody who talks on YouTube, she's somebody who acts in the real world. She's somebody that wants to be involved in activism. She's somebody that wants to be on the streets, wants to be organising, and wants to be building communities. She was, of course, the organiser of the We Were Never Asked survey that we carried out a couple of weekends ago. By now, you all know who I'm talking about, so please give a warm round of applause to Laura Towler.
Wow, this is scary. Okay, so before I start with my speech, I guess I should give a bit of an introduction of who I am for those of you in the room who aren't familiar with me and my work. So I have two primary positions. The first one is that I am an editor and a writer at an organisation called Defend Europa. We're a news and opinion website that features news and opinion from across Europe, and some of the topics that we focus on are things like population replacement, the migrant crisis, the Islamisation of Europe, European politics, nationalist movements in Europe, things like that. We try not to just focus on the effect of what's happening, but we also want to look at the cause and who's behind it, and also solutions as well. And I think that makes us stand out a little bit from some other news sites. It was very important to me when I was choosing a website to write for that I chose one that would allow me to 100% tell the truth. So I would hate working for a news site that said to me, "You can talk about this topic, but don't touch this group over here. But with Defend Europa, I can 100% tell the truth," so I absolutely love it. Because of that, we get a lot of negative attention from the mainstream media, so we've been featured in articles by The Guardian, The HuffPost, The Independent, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. They say that we're spreading conspiracy theories, even though all we do is share their old articles and government statistics. But when we say it's a conspiracy theory, when they say it's just news. We also get a lot of attention from Hope Not Hate, who featured us as one of their top five online haters of 2019. We actually featured alongside Colin and Mark and Morgoth and Tara McCarthy, so that was a big honour. Last week they called us a fruity organisation full of Holocaust deniers and anti-Semites, which is interesting because we've never mentioned the Holocaust, so they just make things up. My other position is I have my own YouTube channel, which is quite a new channel. I only started it this year. I have around 36,000 subscribers, and it's growing by around 1,000 subscribers per week. Some of the topics I talk about are identity and demographics, and I do apologise for this, but I also complain about David Lammy quite a lot. I understand that I could get suspended from YouTube any moment, so I also have BitChute, which I'm using a lot more recently. I upload all of my videos onto BitChute and then only the softer ones onto YouTube. So I have a video tomorrow about Oswald Mosley and Peaky Blinders that will only be going on BitChute, so do check it out. So I wrote a speech for this conference a few weeks ago, and I wanted to counter the mainstream narrative that tells me as a woman, and I think the other ladies in the room will be able to back me up on this, but it tells us that the biggest threat that we face is straight, white, right-wing men. So we're always told that we should rise up and crush the patriarchy, we should be feminists, we should worry about mythical things like the gender pay gap, we should go on holidays with our friends and we should drink wine in the shower, stuff like that. Don't have children because... Don't have children because it will make you unhappy. And the biggest threat when it comes to terrorism, allegedly, is not Muslims, who are responsible for 96.7% of murders in Britain this side of the millennium. It's the gentlemen in this room that are the biggest threat, apparently. So I don't agree with any of that. I think that the biggest threat that we face is our demographic replacement and multiculturalism. So I was going to talk about some of my experiences. But then I thought, that's what I talk about on YouTube all the time, and that's what I moan about at Defend Europe all the time, and you guys are already well familiar with the situation that we're in. So I thought, wouldn't it be great to take this opportunity to talk about something a little bit more positive? So I'm going to talk about what I think we need to do and the kind of attitude that I think we need to have if we're to win this. So I wrote a completely new speech yesterday, which is why I'm reading, I hope that's okay. So this speech was inspired by a Finnish gentleman who goes by the name of Kai Muros. He's been a huge inspiration to me, and I started reading his books and his articles and listening to his speeches about 3 years ago. And I have to admit that I was quite black-pilled before I discovered him. But after discovering him, I now feel completely optimistic about the future, and I hope that that will come through in my speech. So I've learned over the last few years that if you're going to operate in these political circles, then there are four different ways in which you can operate, and you have to choose two of them. So the first choice is between offensive and defensive politics. So if you were to choose defensive politics, you would retreat onto your back foot and constantly explain yourself, defend why you are something or aren't something. But in doing that, you legitimise the moral framework of the person or organisation who has put that proposition to you. So the alternative is offensive politics, where you just reject their moral framework completely and you fire it straight back at them. So just to give you an example, if I was called Islamophobic, if I was using defensive politics, I would say, I'm not Islamophobic because X, Y, Z. But if I was using offensive politics, I would say, I reject your stupid made-up words, and I know that you're only using them to silence constructive criticism of Islam, and I'm not playing that game. So as you guys probably know, we should always choose offensive politics. The other choice is between pro-something and being anti-something. So if you are pro-something, you put forward your own moral framework. You say, this is what I stand for, this is what I would do, this is what my ideal country would look like. And if you're anti-something, then you're just anti-somebody else's moral framework. So a good example of somebody who is anti-something is a rather unsavoury gentleman who goes by the name of Mike Stutchbury. Some of you might be familiar with him. He stalks me on Twitter. So he's anti-racism, he's anti-fascism, he doesn't know what fascism is. And him and his gang of communist LARPers have created this imaginary bad guy, and they're acting like they're some sort of revolutionaries that are fighting back against the system. In reality, he is supported by the system, and he's fighting against the good guys, which is the people in this room, but he's too stupid to realise that. So that is an example of somebody who is very anti-politics. And as you guys probably guessed it, we should always be pro-something. We should always stand for something. I think it's sometimes very easy to fall into the trap of being anti-something. We're anti-mainstream media. We're anti the Conservative Party's handling of Brexit. And it's fine to be all of those things, because those things need highlighting. But there has to be something more than that. We need to give people hope, and we need to give people something to aim for. We need to give people an alternative. Because if we behave like victims and we just complain about things all the time, then we will become victims. So how can we succeed? We will succeed by presenting a real alternative to the absolute shambles that is British politics in 2019. We will represent the concerns and desires of the indigenous peoples of these islands, and we will be completely unwavering and unapologetic in doing so. So do people agree with us? Well, some of you will be aware that Mark and I went out into the streets a couple of weeks ago, and many people in this room helped us as well. And we surveyed the British public on their thoughts on us becoming a minority in Britain. So we went out and we asked about 2,000 people. We said, this is what's happening with our demographics. How do you feel about it? And 7 out of 10 people said to us that they do not want to become a minority in their own country. Now, that's an ethno-nationalist question, because we didn't ask them, are you okay with unlimited amounts of illegal or legal immigration as long as they adhere to our values, you know, stuff like that. We specifically asked a racial question, and 7 out of 10 people had the balls to say to an absolute stranger in the streets, I don't want that to happen. So that's 70% of people in our country who do not have a single politician representing them. This is a huge opportunity for us to put ourselves forward and bring the public over to our side and our way of thinking. I believe that every single person in this room has a role to play. And the reason why I believe that is because the minute that you openly become a nationalist or you openly admit that you don't want to become a minority in your own country, that's the moment that you also begin to represent this movement and this community. And we must represent it at all times by being honourable, by demonstrating self-control, and by being brave. So anybody who follows me on Twitter will know that my mentions are always full of tweets from these really weak left-wing beta males. And Hugh gave some fantastic examples earlier of the kind of stuff that he saw on The Guardian, where they say things like, what even is British culture? Is it colonialism? Is it fish and chips? That kind of stuff. And I get those questions as well to me on Twitter. They right wind me up. But obviously, it's easy for us as the British to brag about our history and our achievements, our science and our art. But I'd like you to think for a moment about our morals and our values as a nation. So I'd like to ask a question. Are you guys familiar with the fact that we have some official morals and values in Britain? Anyone familiar with them? Hands up. One person. Okay. So they're called fundamental British values, and they teach these in schools. So our official values as a nation are democracy, the rule of law, individual liberty, and check this one, mutual respect for and tolerance of those with different faiths and beliefs and for those without faith. So those are our four official values as Britain. So I'm not blown away by any of those, to be honest. I quite like the rule of law, but I think even English law in 2019, what a mess it is. I probably committed a few hate crimes in this speech alone. So I think that we should change Britain's morals and values, and I've had a think about what I think they should be. I think they should be family, nation, justice, merit, fortitude, and virtue. Until the day that we win and we can change official government documentation, we can begin to live according to those morals in our everyday life. Because really, the real morals of Britain aren't some words that have been thought up by some dodgy think tank. They're how the British people really behave. And going back to us all having a role to play, I think it's up to us to lead by example. One of the key things that we must do to succeed and to get the public on side is to be 100% unashamedly committed to what we believe in and to remain entirely adamant and defiant despite the media onslaught that definitely will follow. Many of us will face abuse, misunderstanding, bitter animosity, and possibly the ferocity of struggle and of danger. But as a wise man once said, in return, we can only offer to them the deep belief that they are fighting that a great land may live. It's an advantage to us that we live in an era where public trust in the media and the establishment in general is incredibly low. The British public know that those liars in the mainstream media are dishonest and manipulative. They don't care about the British or Europeans in general, and they do not have our best interests at heart, but we do. So as discussed earlier, we must never retreat onto the back foot when the media attack us. Instead, we must respond in a purely offensive way. We will highlight their dirty underhand tactics, and we will counter their destructive narrative by offering our audience something better. That will be the chance to be part of something greater. A chance to be part of a new era for Britain, an era where we reject any labels of guilt that are placed upon us, an era where we refuse to apologise for our history and success, and an era where we put our own first, and in return, we go back to those dizzy heights that we know that we, the British, are capable of. I am not a conservative. I am a nationalist. I don't want to go back to the past and recreate something that once was. I want us to create something new, something better. If we're to offer an alternative, then whatever we produce, whatever we put on the table, must be fresh, exciting, rebellious, and bold. If we're to attract the youth, then we must be attractive, edgy, and stylish. I love visiting old cathedrals. I love looking at Gothic architecture and Italian Renaissance art, and I love listening to romantic classical music from the 1800s. And each of those things are an incredible testimony to the spirit of that time, but they're also from the past. And I wholeheartedly believe that if we are to succeed and if we are to enthuse people, then we must create something new. We need a new style, an entirely new aesthetic, and it must be the high point of our civilization so far. Our era must be something that is instantly recognizable so that when people look back in 1,000 years, they can pinpoint from our architecture, our fashion, our artwork, or even our style of politics, that this was our time. It was the era that the British fought back and won. I'll give you an example. Over the last couple of years, I've really got into art. And a couple of weeks ago, I visited an art gallery with a friend of mine, a young girl called Aria. Some of you might know her. And they were exhibiting a piece of art called The Triumph of Pan by Nicolas Poisson. I think I've pronounced his name right. He was a French artist from the 1600s. And it was a fantastic piece of art, don't get me wrong, way better than anything that I could paint. But as somebody who was looking at Poisson's art for the first time, I kind of thought, it's great, but I've seen all this before. So although the painting was of a very high quality and it was amazing, it didn't really inspire anything within me. And I read the card at the side of the painting and it said that Poisson was heavily inspired by the Italian Renaissance period from the century before, and also Caravaggio, who came just after the Italian Renaissance period. So I thought to myself, yeah, it's very similar to the art. And although the standard and the quality and the skill of the art was amazing, it didn't inspire me or it wasn't galvanizing for me. So I'd like to contrast that with my favorite artist, who is a man whose name we pronounce incorrectly in England. We call him Vincent van Gogh, which is strange because I think most other countries call him Vincent van Gogh. And I wanted to pronounce his name correctly for this speech, so I asked my colleague at Defend Europa, who is in the Netherlands, and he said that the V should be pronounced as an F, so it's Vincent and Van, and then the go would be with a silent G, so it's Ho. So I think it's Vincent van Ho, but I know that there's at least one person in the audience from the Netherlands, so please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, thank you. That was much better than what I did. So as you'll be aware, he was a Dutch post-impressionist artist who died probably by suicide in the year 1890. So he's my favourite artist, and although I can hold a piece of his art up and then put it next to a piece of art by, say, Raphael or Sandro Botticelli or Caravaggio, and I can see that the second group is better in quality, his art makes me feel more, it excites me, it stirs up more energy within me. So I won't give his life story because it's a very life story and you guys will probably be familiar with it. But he had a very tragic life, and he said that he wanted to capture both the beauty and the tribulation of life within his art. And he succeeds. I don't even think that I can put into words how spectacularly he succeeds. I have a poster of his self-portrait with the grey felt hat in my bedroom, and it's both beautiful and scary to look at the same time. So I recognise that art is subjective and that different people like different things. And I also recognise that all artists get influence from somewhere. But what I'm trying to demonstrate is that it is possible to create something new that energises and arouses and persuades. And I have faith in the British that we can create something new, and it will be a high point in our culture, and it will be better than anything else that we've seen before. When we win, because we will win, we then have this fantastic opportunity to pave the way and lay the foundations for an entirely new era in British history. We should consider ourselves very lucky for that. That wise man that I mentioned earlier, he also said this. He said, "I could not ask to live at any other moment of history than this, because never has mankind, never has the human species been confronted with such possibilities, with such choices of disaster or of greater heights and greater glories." Thank you for listening.
If you're sick of hearing an anti-white message, then you've come to the right place. You're listening to Radio Area at Radio Area.